Welcome to Woke History. I'm your host, Dr. Joshua K. Wright. I'm a college history professor in Washington, D.C. Woke History is a new podcast series that features lively conversations with guests, focusing on historical and contemporary issues of race, gender, political activism, and culture that are often ignored in most high school classrooms and social studies textbooks. Guests will include a wide range of individuals, from scholars and community activists to professional athletes, media personalities, and others. Today's guest is Sonia Lockett, the Chief Impact Officer at One Community. One Community is a major player in Hollywood and the entertainment industry. Ms. Lockett will discuss how she and the company harnesses the power of storytelling to bring about social change and justice here in America and worldwide. Let's begin our conversation. Sonia, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, this is really a privilege to have you. I'm very excited for this interview. So the name of this podcast is Woke History, right?
Love it.
And I'm a former history major, teach history at the college level, so that's part of where the title comes from. But I wanted to ask you, as the daughter of, I believe it's a history professor?
Yes.
Right, okay. So I know you grew up with history in the household, and I really wanted to know, why does history matter to you? Why do you think history is important?
Oh my gosh, history, yeah, my dad was history professor at Southern University. He was the chair of the history department, was there like 40 plus years. And he taught me everything is connected to history. You know, history is cyclical. And so when you don't know history, you're bound to either repeat the mistakes or you're making mistakes because you don't know the history. And so that was always a big thing for me growing up in my household, is knowing the history of everything and how it relates to what's happening. So I'm a big history buff, always have been, and just really talked about now at the beginning of this kind of year of unrest and craziness, really talking about seeing the parallels to things that happened before. You know, the parallels, just like I said, wow, this campaign is going to be a 1968 revisited, looking like the Law and Order piece and everything. And so everything is just goes back to history. And I think when people, and most people don't know history, we know a version of history. And especially when you talk about people of color, the majority do not know the history of people of color in this country. And unfortunately, a lot of us don't know our history as well. So, history, it's paramount. And especially, I feel like the work that I do, it's paramount in that as well.
Some things in common. You mentioned the fact that you had attended, growing up, you attended private schools that were predominantly white. So I attended private schools as well. Now, my earlier schools weren't predominantly white, but the high school I attended, it's a school in the suburbs of D.C. Technically, it's Maryland. It's called DeMatha Catholic High School,
well,
which is it's an all-boy private school, which does have a very large minority population, and I'm sure it's grown since I graduated, but that was still, you know, technically considered a predominantly white school. And then for graduate school, I went to Howard University, HU,
you know.
And you went to Howard as well, so we have that connection. When I was at Howard, one of the things I did, I founded and I chaired this program. It was an annual spring event called the Hip Hop in Higher Education Symposium. And we were using hip hop to delve into a number of issues that impact the Black community, and specifically like that younger hip hop generation, right? And we got into various topics each year when we did the event, and we would have scholars, students who would bring in celebrities from music, TV, sports, etc., to be involved in this. And the third year we did it, our focus was dealing with HIV/AIDS awareness. And one of the sponsors that year was the BET Wrap It Up. And I'm bringing this up because you have a lot of experience with that particular initiative. Can you talk about that just a little bit?
Yes, I'm so proud of the work of Wrap It Up. Previously, at one point before, I worked for BET for a number of years and was actually brought over to head up and grow the Wrap It Up campaign. They had just started having kind of a public affairs social responsibility focus. And HIV and AIDS, their research was telling them that at that point, that was the number one issue of concern for their audience. And I was working at a nonprofit right before that called Lifebeat, the Music Industry Fights AIDS. And that was a time where the numbers were showing that AIDS was really, really rising in the Black community. And we were doing a lot of work at Lifebeat at that time with MTV. And I reached out to BET because I had some folks some Howard folks who were over there and saying, hey, you know, we should do some partnership with you guys as well. And they were like, oh my gosh, we just decided to do this campaign around HIV and AIDS. We were talking, and then it became, well, can you come over and run it? So went over, and I'm so proud of that work, because at that point there was a real stigma around talking about HIV and AIDS, especially in the Black community. And we had the opportunity, because we were BET and it was this media company, and especially for young people, all eyes were on BET. That was the height of like 106 at Park and all of that. So we had a huge audience who were the audience that was most vulnerable at that time around HIV and AIDS. So we had a huge opportunity to be able to reach that audience. So between integrating HIV messaging in all of our programming, doing special editions of 106 in Park, developing new specials, integrating it in the award shows, we were really able to make a big difference in terms of educating that audience and empowering them and moving them toward action. So we did this a lot in partnership with the Kaiser Family Foundation. My thing was always, we at BET knew our audience, we knew how to market to our audience, but we were not issue experts. And so we partnered with people who were issue experts in the area of HIV and AIDS. And they did some research and evaluation around the work we did around the campaign. Because one of the things we did for all of our programming, all the PSAs, everything, we would have a hotline number that went into the CDC hotline. And so we were able to really measure like what messages we're getting through. That PSA had a big spike, so we understood people were really interested in testing or where to find testing and things like that. So we were able to do a lot of measurement with the campaign. But then there was an evaluation that was done, not only by Kaiser, but by a couple of other organizations, about the effectiveness of the messaging work that we were doing through entertainment, through hip hop, using hip hop stars, using platforms like 106 in Park. And at one point, BET was actually the largest public Wrap It Up campaign was actually the largest public education campaign around HIV and AIDS for the African American community, which was huge. And really being able to hear like a Jim Jones be on 106 in Park and talk about how I believe it was his father who died or was infected with HIV, to hear people talk about it and normalize that conversation and the importance of testing and doing on-air HIV test and using like artists like Common and Fantasia and all these people who are coming on to talk about the importance of getting tested, the importance of knowing your status, the importance of condom use, and then to have the research show that because of watching something on 106 in Park, because of us coming to your high school with a Wrap It Up Teen Forum, that people were actually saying, one, they were getting their information around HIV and AIDS from BET and the Wrap It Up campaign. Two, it caused them to think more seriously about the issue of HIV and AIDS. They were having conversations with their partners. They were increasing condom use, and people were getting tested. So to see that we were able to really make a huge difference in the term, in the way we talked about HIV in the community, reducing the stigma and pushing people to action was great. And it was really a testament to the power of being able to use media and entertainment to catalyze action around a certain issue.
Yeah, I know, like, when we did that, that was definitely one of my proudest events when we had the HIV AIDS awareness. And you mentioned Jim Jones. He was one of our speakers at that particular symposium. And, yeah, we did the free testing, and a lot of students came out. And, yeah, it was great. I was very proud of that work and what we were able to get accomplished. How long were you with BET?
Oh, my gosh. I was there 13 years.
13 years. Okay.
Yeah.
Do you think that BET's been criticized unfairly for not doing enough, not just with the HIV AIDS awareness, but in terms of like social issues in general? Like, over the years, especially when I was a student at Howard, I would hear a lot of people who would say, oh, well, BET's just showing, you know, ratchet music videos, and they're not really about doing anything in the Black community. Do you think that's an unfair criticism of the network?
I think it was, I think there's a twofold issue around that. I think there was some unfairness of the criticism, but then there was some fairness because one of the things that BET did not do enough of, and that was challenging for me while I was there, was to let people know what they were doing. Because, you know, we would go out and do the teen forums, we'd go out. You know, there was the HIV AIDS campaign. I developed an education initiative. We did a breast cancer awareness. We did, you know, all the voting and civic education work. But that was often not what was people went out and talked about, even internally, when they were talking about the work of BET. So in some sense, it was unfair because a lot of times people weren't watching. You know, they were, yeah, they knew Uncut and they knew all these things, but they didn't know the, you know, the new specials on this, and they didn't know the teen forums, and they didn't know that on the, you know, college tour, we were doing HIV testing at all the college stops and connecting people to local resources in their area. Definitely, there's more that could have been done. And I think that people did not, even internally, did not recognize the power of the brand to do that work, because I think people were kept going, you know, the E is for entertainment and we don't want to bring people down and do all of this other stuff. But that was about also part of your brand. Like, if you're talking brand and marketing, that is also part of your brand. Our brand is, if we are for the people, these are the things we're actually doing for the people. But there was a lot that was done. So there's some unfairness, but there's a lot more that could have been done. So that's why I say it's kind of a twofold. I agree and disagree with the comment, because I think people didn't understand. I think people understand a little more now that you can do good and do well as a company at the same time. It's not mutually exclusive.
Yeah, and I remember when I was a kid growing up, you know, because I grew up on television, and BET was one of the networks I used to watch a lot. And I remember as a kid, there would be the videos, Donnie Simpson had the video Soul, and, you know, Tigger had Rap City. But then there was Teen Summit with, I think it was Ananda Lewis, I think was the host. It would come on Saturdays. And then you also would have Ed Gordon had a nightly news program. Yeah. Tavis Smiley had a news show as well. So there was a lot of balance. And then I guess people got upset because that sort of left for a time period. Now, I see in recent years, though, they've been trying to come back, and they've had, you know, various news specials around the election, obviously, but I've seen them do different news specials throughout the year, even when it wasn't an election season. So,
and that's the thing we always did.
Yeah.
You know, and I was a huge fan of Teen Summit. There was nowhere else that Black teens had that time to talk about issues that were important to them. There was no other kind of newsy public affairs type show for Black youth. And unfortunately, you know, it was a ratings thing. And people were saying, oh, the ratings. And then we got a lot of that about the news too. But it was that thing of like, you gotta watch it as well. You can't, you know, it can't think it's not gonna be here. Because bottom line, it is a business and people, you know, look at the ratings. I personally always said, well, there are some things you should, you know, get the ratings everywhere else, but you need it to have this just because you needed it. But I wasn't on that end of the business, so.
Yeah, the ratings always do matter. I even remember when I was doing my event at Howard and we would have the panels, the ones that had the bigger name celebrities, those were the draws, right?
Exactly.
Whereas if I had something like a pre-event, right, before Jim Jones and whoever shows up, and if it was just like me and you talking or people that other, you know, people might not know as household names, those wouldn't get the huge turnouts. So even though the content may have actually been better
right.
in the earlier session, you know, you're coming to hear that big name say something. So I want to move on, though. So you've done a lot in your career. You talked about the nonprofit you were working with prior to being with BET. You had your 13 years at BET. I know you also spent some time working as a public affairs specialist with Mayor Marion Barry's administration in Washington, D.C. And I'm sure we don't have time to get into that, but I'm sure you have tons
That's
of stories.
That's a whole other
show. Right. That's another podcast episode. You talk about Mayor Barry. But now you are working as the chief impact officer at One Community. So I want to, you know, if you could just kind of explain what One Community is, what you do, and then also talk about this concept of social impact entertainment.
Sure. So One Community is we bill ourselves as a social impact and co-finance company. So we are co-financiers for content, film, television, right now primarily film. We're a fairly new company. And so we come in and invest in content. And the thing we look at is investing in content that, one, is great content, because that's the basis of everything. You need to tell a really good story. But then we also look at kind of on a micro level, films that address some issue of equity or equality. So it may be criminal justice reform, like Just Mercy that we were a financier of, or issues around like education, gender equality, economic inequity, mental health, etc. And our goal is to be able to use that content. I always say, when people ask what you do, harness the power of storytelling for social change. And so our goal is to be able to invest in content that is entertaining, that is impactful, but then to be able to leverage that content to amplify or accelerate the work that is being done by organizations and individuals around issues that are highlighted in that piece of content.
You mentioned the film Just Mercy, and I have a clip from that film that I want to play, so give me just one second. And then we'll talk about Just Mercy a little more.
It's easy to see this case as one man trying to prove his innocence. But when you take a Black man and you put him on death row a year before his trial and exclude Black people from serving on his jury, when you base your conviction on the coerced testimony of a white felon and ignore the testimony of 24 law-abiding Black witnesses, when any evidence proving his innocence is suppressed and anyone who tries to tell the truth is threatened, This case becomes more than the trial of just a single defendant. It becomes a test of whether we're going to be governed by fear and by anger or by the rule of law. If the people standing in the back of this courtroom are all presumed guilty when accused, if they have to leave here and live in fear of when this very thing will happen to them, if we're just going to accept the system that treats you better if you're rich and guilty than if you're poor and innocent, then we can't claim to be just. If we say we're committed to equal justice under law, to protecting the rights of every citizen, regardless of wealth, race, or status, then we have to end this nightmare for Walter McMillan and his family. The charges against him have been proven to be a false construction of desperate people, fueled by bigotry and bias, who ignored the truth in exchange for easy solutions, and that's not the law. That's not justice. That's not right. I ask that this case be dismissed immediately, Your Honor. Thank you.
So that right there, really powerful scene, ladies and gentlemen who are listening. That was a clip from the 2019 film Just Mercy, which is a cinematic adaptation of the book Just Mercy by civil rights attorney Bryan Stevenson. And it deals with the early part of his career, and in particular, this case that he was involved in to get Walter McMillan, a black man who was wrongfully sent to death row, cleared of all of his charges. So one community played a role in this movie, right? Can you talk a little bit about what you guys were doing specifically around this film?
Sure. So we, along with one community, along with Endeavor Content and Macro and Participant, were co-financiers. So we, put money in. We were have producer, executive producer credits on the film. But we also developed the social impact campaign that to run alongside of the film. And so it was it's a campaign. This was an opportunity. Bryan Stevenson, hero, beloved in the criminal justice reform community. And it was an opportunity to use this film, use this piece of content, use Bryan's work to uplift the issue around criminal justice reform. And we looked at really how are we going to be able to use this piece of content. And one of the things that we do for any of the campaigns, the social impact campaigns that we develop, and something I used to do at BET, is always starting, as I said before, we're not necessarily the issue experts, even though our CEO, Scott, is very involved in criminal justice reform and started a nonprofit, the Anti-Recidivism Coalition, that works with returning citizens. There's still a whole level of work around criminal justice reform that we're not experts in. So the first part was to really bring together a lot of individuals and organizations who work in various parts of criminal justice reform around the table for two brain trust sessions to really hear what's happening right now and what could, and because everyone was so familiar with Bryan and the book and the work, what can we do with this piece of content that we know is coming out next year? And how can we use this to really, are there areas that have a possibility of making some real impact over this next, are there laws that we can help push? How can we help humanize this issue for people? How can we help people get proximate to the issue? And so we sat with all of those experts and really listened to everything that was going on, what areas that we should really focus the campaign on, because when this film came out, we know that maybe in these states they're looking at abolishing the death penalty or changing laws around juvenile sentencing. And then we were at a place where in this country at that point, criminal justice reform was like one of the few bipartisan issues. So how can we also bring both sides? We at the tables, we had people from the left of the left to the right of the right to sit down and talk about how can we develop something that will help move criminal justice reform. So we developed a campaign that turned into a campaign called Represent Justice, and which was executed by a nonprofit that we worked with. But developing a campaign that can use the themes of the movie, as you saw, that scene was really powerful. So you had people coming out saying, I did not realize that our justice system was this messed up, for lack of a better word. And our goal was to really, how do we develop something? I always say to, how do we develop something that you sit and watch this piece of content, especially this movie, and there's so many emotions, there's anger, there's sadness. How do we develop something that you can take those emotions and put it into something that is concrete action? And so that's what we did, develop a campaign that one, helped to educate people, helped to get them proximate to the issue and empower them, but also to move them to actual engagement. And that's how we approach all of the work. So we're really proud of the work of Represent Justice, that we were able to, one, do things like hold convenings for journalists, because you talk about being able, the media is a real push in how people see the world, and the words we use are really important. So if you're talking 30 years after someone has gotten out of prison, you keep calling them an ex-felon, that felon piece keeps pushing in instead of a returning citizen or a formerly incarcerated individual. The felon takes away their humanity in some sense. So talking to even get people to start speaking differently, it changes the narrative around criminal justice, change the narrative around returning citizens. And so looking at things to change the narrative, how do we get more people involved into the fight around criminal justice reform? We worked on this thing, worked with a lot of the NBA teams around screening the film for them, having discussions around that, and then taking them into prisons and having conversations with the citizens in prisons, and them coming out with a better understanding of some of the issues around criminal justice, knowing that most of them had someone, you know, the way the justice system is in this country, most people who are Black have someone that you know who has been through the criminal justice system, and to have them come out and be a better advocates around criminal justice reform. Wow. And doing that sort of work. So there was a lot of tiers that we looked at in terms of how do we use this content to get people more involved in shifting the narrative, in maybe doing policy and legislative work, and even behavioral change in terms of how you think about people who were incarcerated, who are incarcerated, and how you think about the system. Because if you don't have any personal knowledge, or your idea is only that, well, they must have done something wrong, to be able to see this piece of content that shows that this person didn't do anything wrong, that there's some, there's a level of bias in the system that needs to be changed, and to be able to see that, and then, okay, then how can I change it? Well, here are the things you can do.
Wow, that's really powerful. You mentioned the NBA. I was watching, I don't know if you all were the ones working with this particular team, but I know ESPN did something earlier this year where they showed the players from the Milwaukee Bucks mm-hmm. going to a prison.
That was Play for Justice.
Yeah. That was you guys?
Yeah.
Okay. That was Play for Justice. Yeah, and that was so powerful because I was sitting there watching these guys, and, you know, guys were really, like, in tears, and they were emotional, and a lot of the Black players, like you said, did have family members who were incarcerated, so that really hit home. But then even there were white players on the team who didn't have that experience, but that really opened up their, you know, their mind and their eyes to the plight of those particular men, you know, who are dealing with that. So that's really powerful work. And then also another point that you mentioned that I thought was really good, you were saying how we have to change narratives and change language. And that made me think of the campaign to, I think it's called Remove the Box or something, like when
right, you're filling out the a box.
Job. Right, right. You're filling out a job application and they yeah. have that question about, you know, had you ever been incarcerated, and how by checking that box, you know, a lot of times that can stigmatize those exactly. men and women as they're trying to get back into society, because then people don't want to hire them because they have this false notion that they're going to be a troublemaker. So.
Right. And that's why I think that that's why I actually I love this work. It's an extension of what we did at BET in a sense, starting that using being able to use more broadly entertainment that people go into. Is we always say like this, putting the spinach in the brownies, like you go to see because you're going to the movies, you're going to be entertained, you're watching an award show, you're going to be entertained, but to be able to sneak in some education and to go out, there's this theory called narrative transportation. And it's the idea that you go in, you see this piece of content, especially in a movie or a TV show, you're following the character, you're ingrained and in, emotionally invested in that character's journey in the film, and then you are somehow changed after you finished that journey. And so to be able to use that journey to get to a different level of change. And I remember when I was working on, really involved with the HIV/AIDS work, that a lot of organizations always talked about, like the movie Philadelphia, that saying, you know, we could put out pamphlets and everything explaining stuff, but we got so many more calls after people watched Philadelphia. And some of the stigma started being taken away because it was Tom Hanks and it was Denzel and people they identified with. And then to be able to see that journey. And that's the same thing like with Just Mercy or other movies, like you're able to emotionally see that journey. And if we can use that and then find other ways, especially with culture, to get you proximate to that, to get people to be able to change their attitude or their mind or open something up, then you're able to actually make the concrete change as well.
Yeah.
That first journey is always like getting them to view things in a different way.
Yeah. You know, so in the wake of the murders of Breonna Taylor and George Floyd, there's been this renewed spirit of activism amongst entertainers, professional athletes, etc. Do you think that it'll be easier moving forward to get Hollywood studios to commit to projects by and about people of color that serve a higher purpose than simply making money? Like, do you see a renaissance happening now because of what's happening?
I do see, I do think people are open and looking at how they can. I still think it is still a business. And so there is still a bottom line thing that's looked at. But I think what the last couple of years, number one, has shown that inclusive content yeah. makes money.
Yeah.
Content that is, you know, black people look at horror and, you know, people, they've seen that can make money. I think there is a heightened sensitivity from this year of trying to look for projects and be more, I don't want to use the word concerned, but more thoughtful, I guess, about can we do those projects that are more uplifting. But it is still look at the bottom line of can they make money. And so I'm just hoping that this is not a moment, because we've seen before, like there's moments and everyone jumps on something and then it goes away. I'm hoping that this is not that time, but I do think that, you know, I hear people talk more about looking for those projects that are inclusive, looking for those projects that do say something. And my hope is also just from, you know, the historical perspective, looking at those projects that tell stories that people don't know about, another side of history. Like, I love that you had Lovecraft Country and HBO.
The Watchmen. You know,
yes, both telling the story of the Tulsa Massacre, which most people did not know about. And there's a way to weave that in. And I think that if we can continue to do those types of stories that are elevating, but done in a way that is entertaining and that brings in audiences, because that's butts in seats and you know, bottom line, because it's a business, is always going to be a concern. And I don't think we're at the point yet where we can, you know, always, like other folks can do flop after flop after flop, and they're still going to do those films. I still don't think we're quite there yet. But I do think there is a real concerted effort in Hollywood right now to make sure that they are looking for those stories and elevating those stories and storytellers.
What new projects are you working on right now?
Oh gosh, it's an exciting time. We've got a couple of things coming up. The first thing that I'm really excited about is we are now on board the Respect movie, the Aretha Franklin movie, which I'm very excited about. It takes place in a specific, from Aretha's childhood to a specific period in Aretha's life, and it really is a powerful film. And excited about the work that we are looking at doing around that particular film. We also have in development a couple of projects. One is with Martin Scorsese and Ben Affleck, King Leopold's Ghost. So it's from an adaptation from the book, King Leopold's Ghost, about the Belgian king in the Congo. In that work, so really, really, really excited about that. And then we have another film in development called In the Shadow of the Mountain. And that one is another one that just really, really powerful piece. It's about, it's the true story of... Sylvia Vasquez Lovato, and it's taken from her book. And she's the first Peruvian woman to summit Mount Everest. And then what she would do, she went back and she really found healing and power in doing these mountain climbs. And then what she started to do was organize treks to Mount Everest for other young women and women who were survivors of abuse. And just really powerful, like the transformation that had in a lot of these young girls' lives.
Wow. When is the Respect film coming out?
It is scheduled, I believe, August 13th. It was originally supposed to come out in October. It's been kind of, you know, ahead of pushback from COVID, but really excited about that one. It's Jennifer Hudson, Marlon Wayans, phenomenal in it.
Okay.
Yeah, Forrest Whitaker, just a great cast.
Yeah, I noticed like a lot of the films you guys have been dealing with, you know, dealing with, I guess you would say, people who are Black, and then you also mentioned the last film, who has a woman who's Latin American. Are you also doing films, or are you planning on doing any projects involving Asian Americans? Because I know they're underrepresented a lot of times in Hollywood.
Yeah, we are, our whole thing is to really look at, first, what are the great stories? Like, is it a great story? And is it inclusive? Like, look, you know, who's the storyteller? Who's the story about? And we've been getting like a lot of amazing scripts in, and is it something we can do? So we definitely look for stories by, inclusive stories by all people of color and white people. Like, we're not, you know, we're not, you know, setting that off. Cause, but yeah, we have not had that story yet, but that we're looking, story, indigenous people, just, everyone, because we want to make sure those stories get told.
This all up, how do you see the work that you're doing shaping the history for future generations?
Oh, wow. I'm hoping, one, that it will show that, oh gosh, that's such a good question. I think one, to the power of media and entertainment and images, and how that shapes everything. And I hopefully this work will help it to shape it in a more positive way. I hope that it will also help, especially for future generations, to be more critical, have a critical eye when they look at media, when they hear things, and know that, is that really it, or is that how this narrative has been shaped for me to think that way or look that way? I think that's one of the biggest things that I hope it helps people to be more critical thinkers and viewers and consumers of media and content. And I hope that this work, you know, because I always say these campaigns and the work that we do around particular issues or films are only part of kind of the chain of change, that we know change doesn't happen with one movie. There may be some movement, but the movement keeps going. And hopefully that some of this work has been a big part of moving things forward on certain issues and change in our kind of quest for a more equitable and just society. So that's what I hope that this work is able to do.
Wow. Well, thank you so much. This has been a fantastic conversation, and I hope that our audience got something out of it. And are you on social media? Do you have a website where people can follow you?
I am on social media. I am on Twitter at Lockett14.
Okay.
I have to remember, and then Instagram at 14 Lockett, I think.
Okay.
Or they switch around.
Okay. Okay, awesome. Well, people, please follow her. Please support these projects that she's working on. She told you about some of these really big movies that'll be coming out pretty soon. Respect and King Leopold's Ghost. And the other film as well, In the Shadow of the Mountain.
In the Shadow of the Mountain.
Right, so please make sure you go out and support those movies if you haven't seen Just Mercy yet. It's on YouTube and various places, video on demand. So, you know, please support it. And again, thank you.
Thank you. This was amazing. I enjoyed it.
Our show for the week. Special thanks to today's guest, Sonya Lockett. And thank you, the listening audience. If you like what you heard, please check out future episodes. Next week's podcast guest will be comedian and movie star Lil Rel Howery. Many of you know Rel from his role as the TSA agent in the blockbuster and Oscar-nominated film Get Out. He also had his TV show on the Fox Network as well. Currently, he's starring in a new film about the slain civil rights leader, Fred Hampton, titled Judas and the Black Messiah. Rel will be joining me to discuss that project and several other topics. A special shout out, as always, to Uncle Phil and Aunt Viv. Have a blessed day.